Welcome to the Mind Money Spectrum podcast, where your hosts, Aaron Ogti and Trishul Patel, go beyond traditional finance questions to help you explore how to use your money to achieve the freedom you want in life.
In this episode, Trishul and Aaron discuss how they are doing as parents during COVID-19. They share recent experiences dealing with their kids of different ages, and they describe how they are struggling to make decisions about how to move forward. Between work and school, parents find themselves stuck between a rock and a hard place, and it's not going to get any better anytime soon. They spoke with other parents and teachers, and they concede that no option feels ideal. Given how difficult everyone's lives are now, they have learned not to hold it against any parent. Anything goes during these tough times, and the best we can do is to take it one day at a time. And now, on to our conversation.
Hi, my name is Aaron Ogti. I'm a financial advisor in the Bay Area, and I'm here with Trishul Patel, a wealth manager on the East Coast.
Hey, Aaron, great to be here today, and thanks everybody for listening.
Great to be here as well. Today, we're going to be talking about kids and school and work and maybe kind of venting a little bit. Might have a little bit of a therapy session between the two of us. It's currently July, and my wife and I are having conversations on, do we send kids back to school? So we're going to kind of talk about some of the factors, some of the information that we're getting, and it's kind of influenced by a New York Times article with the headline, "In the COVID-19 economy, you can have a kid or a job, you can't have both," by Deb Perelman. And I hope I don't mispronounce her name. So to give you some context, my kids are 9, 7, and 4. And I vividly remember March 13th. It was Friday the 13th. It was a day that the older two that are in elementary school had a day off anyways. It was a scheduled day off for teacher development. They were going to be home. And this was right in the midst of figuring out what's going on. Things are closing. So they are home. And then the following, like while we were home and found out that weekend that it was not opening up the next Monday. They had homeschooling. The teachers actually did a pretty impressive job of switching to Google Classroom. And now that we've had a summer big break, as August comes up, we're looking at what's going to happen. And I don't honestly know. We have ideas, we have thoughts, and the decision in front of us. But I wanted to kind of talk it out to at least get some other opinions or takes and see how are we framing our decision-making process? Because that's always been a big emphasis of mine, is focusing on the decision-making process allows you to not regret the result. So focusing on process over results. So Trishul, do you want to give some quick background for your household situation and what you're seeing over the next month?
Right. I can empathize a bit with your situation. I'm sure you have it much more challenging than I do. We do have one child and it has been rough, but I think I've said this in the past. I can't imagine if we had multiples of what we have now. We have a 2-year-old toddler, and I remember in March, a similar situation of basically things were kind of going okay, but we knew the headlines, and then we had just come back from a trip from Florida, in fact, and things kind of seemed okay at the end of February, meaning we were aware of things going on the West Coast, maybe. And there were cases kind of bubbling up in the teens or in the United States around that time. But we knew perhaps something was going to happen. And then all of a sudden, cases started to show up in our state, in Pennsylvania. And what my wife and I were doing is we were just keeping track of the numbers of cases in our county. And we said, when we see more than, I think we said like 10 cases in our county, then we'll start getting a little worried. And we kind of saw them go up with this exponential path, starting at 1 and then 2 in our county over the next few days, and then 8. And then sure enough, it hit that 10. And then we just started scratching our heads. And I took a deeper dive and I just started noticing this kind of exponential pattern everywhere where COVID seemed to pop up, and realized that this wasn't something that was going to go away quickly. So that's when we started having a pretty stronger conversation between my wife and I on, where it looks like we're going to have to essentially pull my daughter out of daycare, or the daycare is likely going to shut down pretty soon. So as it turned out, we did pull my daughter out, and the daycare shut down soon after that anyway. And we've kind of just been managing as best we can. I'm quite fortunate, though, to have my parents not too far from where we are, so they've been able to help. Initially, we just kept her at home, and then we realized we're not nearly as productive as we used to be when she used to go to school 4 days a week. And what we decided is to have her with grandparents for part of the time, allowing us to work. And we just kind of have been shuffling back and forth. It hasn't been completely ideal, but we've kind of made it work. But we're at that stage, kind of where you are, Aaron, where we have to make a pretty tough decision on, do we send our child back to school if it opens in a few weeks or a month, or is it even going to open? And will these waves continue? Meaning, if things look okay now and they start to get bad, are we going to be stuck on this cycle where just as we're about to send the kid back in, oh, nope, things are bad and we got to pull the kid out? It seems like it's going to be a pretty high level of disruption for at least the foreseeable future as I see it.
Yeah, that's a great point that, I guess, to give more context, my 9-year-old, she was finishing up third grade. She's now going to fourth. She did a pretty good job of adapting to the online school and getting all the assignments through Google Classroom. And there's definitely the age of the child matters a great deal. The 7-year-old, she's finishing up first grade. She did pretty good on the assignments, but she needed a lot of help with just kind of the computer logistics aspect. So logging on, making sure that passwords to other sites that the teacher was recommending were working correctly. And so there's enough parental supervision from that perspective. And again, we're also fortunate enough, we have the space in our house. We had already gotten a Chromebook for my older daughter because all standardized testing is done on Chromebooks, and we want her to just feel comfortable with using a computer, and third grade's about when they start, so she should be able to type basically. And so we knew that we were going to do that for the next child as well, for my middle daughter. So we got a Chromebook for her so they could both do the Google Classroom at the same time. But there are things like the teacher would recommend a science video on YouTube. So she followed the link and she did a good job. And then YouTube's autoplay would play the next video and then the next video. And we weren't literally sitting right next to her at that moment, either because my wife and I are trying to work or we were trying to help our 4-year-old. And so she would kind of go off without realizing that she was off track. She thought she was supposed to be watching this. She was part of what the teacher assigned.
Seriously, can you turn autoplay off?
You can, well, it's like, you can, but we didn't realize this for several days. We saw her working on it and watching things that the teacher had assigned, and we were kind of checking some of the work she had done. Like, why is this taking so long? Like, it took us a while to figure out that specific thing. But that's just one small example.
Oh.
The 4-year-old, so we kept him from preschool, and the preschool teacher did a great job of adapting Zoom meetings for preschoolers. And we were really, really impressed. She would do a lot of sing-alongs, also using YouTube videos. She had a lot of interaction. She was able to kind of mute the kids and unmute them and control the conversation pretty well. And there was also a lot of that new toy feeling for the kids. So they really liked participating. They were like to be able to see their friends. And that went pretty well for at least the first month, probably the first 2 months. But by March, April, May, and into June, no, the kids just weren't paying attention as much. There's just, they didn't like staring at a screen while they're and sitting still. It's like you can't expect 4-year-olds and 3-year-olds to sit still. That's just not realistic. And so that became harder and harder on myself or my wife. And if we were trying to get anything related to helping 3 kids, it means that we could get no work done. And so my wife and I have started have conversation. We still have kind of one-on-ones every night of looking at the schedule the next day of, okay, I have meetings from this time to this time. This meeting is interruptible. This meeting is not. Okay, I have these schedules. So we realize that it's possible at best we're each working half the time because we're taking care of kids and supervising them and trying to teach them things that they need help with the other half the time. And so that this was pretty hard. So last week, based on county guidance, based on state guidance and other things related to preschools, and a not quite a recommendation, but information from our pediatrician that there seems to be very little child-to-child transfer, we made the decision to send our 4-year-old back to preschool. That there's only, I think, 10 kids, it's the owner and 2 teachers, and they're trying to be as safe as possible. But that allowed us to focus on helping the other 2 older daughters who can be a little more self-sufficient, but also gives a little more time to work. And that was a really, really hard decision. We still don't know if we made the right decision. But again, kind of focus on the decision-making process over the results, we think that that's better for him because he just no longer liked being at home trying to participate in preschool Zoom calls. He was getting frustrated and upset. He didn't have any kids his age to play with. His sisters would kind of dominate play, which is normal with siblings of different ages. And so sending him back really helped him, and it also helped the rest of our household. But now we have to make the decision of what does school look like for the older two, where it's going to be a lot more kids. And we're talking to teachers that we know. We're talking to like all the information that we get from the district and a teacher at the school who lives in the neighborhood. We see her walking her dog and have chats in the driveway every now and then. And other parents. And there's kind of a lot of things that go into what's going on, and I'll try and get into that a little bit, but it's that overwhelming feeling of being stuck between a rock and a hard place of we have a really difficult decision and both options suck. So before I get into that, do you want to add anything related to science as we currently understand, whether it's related to COVID, children, or the economy or schools?
Sure. It's pretty much common knowledge at this point that COVID tends to affect, in terms of mortality concerns, the elderly, and in terms of mortality concerns, individuals who are younger are kind of in the clear. But the concern about young children is they tend to spread diseases pretty quickly. That's just the concern that people initially had. That's the knee-jerk reaction. And it's interesting because there have been a lot of school closures, but during the same time, there have been programs that actually needed to be open because there were first responders and individuals in the front line that had children that needed to be taken care of during the early months of the COVID-19 shutdowns that we've been seeing. So we actually have some data of how those children ended up and how those facilities that housed those children and kept open to help take care of frontline workers, kids, did. So that might provide some insight. And just to kind of put the summary first, things actually turned out better than I think we all had expected from the data that came in, which is helpful to understand. So part of this understanding was looking at individuals who were at the YMCA, for example. The Y actually stayed open and had up to 40,000 kids under their care from ages 1 to 14 across over 1,000 separate sites. So a good amount of data can be derived from that, just looking at what happened there. And it actually turned out that there were very few cases of COVID that spread through these facilities, and they were actually able to track them pretty extensively given all the precautions they take. In fact, there were almost no recorded cases of child to adult transmission of COVID-19 that they saw based upon looking at this information. So there's not zero risk, but basically what they ended up doing is they followed social distancing standards. They tried to keep masks on where possible. They tried to flag anybody who looked as if they might be sick. And the teachers themselves were very good at following, or the caregivers themselves were very good at following the guidelines. And all of this went a long way, as it seems, to keep the level of transmission very, very low in an environment that you would think would allow COVID to spread like wildfire. I'm sure we've all heard these stories where, you know, one person shows up in an area and it spreads like crazy when it's been an adult, but they haven't seen these types of wild spreading when it came to children based on this population that they looked at of kids. Now, part of what they're saying might be responsible for this is, as I mentioned, they did take a lot of precautions that seem sensible. They did a lot of temperature checks, a lot of screenings, and they also ended up providing a lot of space for the children to spread out, not keeping them in tight quarters. So it seems like following a good amount of recommended guidance can go a long way. Also, hand washing, things like that we've already heard about can be helpful. You know, one tip that I've heard from research like this is kids like to put a little bit of soap and quickly rinse their hands and go run around and touch mud again very quickly. And part of it is, you know, just making hand scrubbing more entertaining. You take like erasable marker and you mark a butterfly on their, you know, left hand and a snail on the right. And then you tell them, you know, let's see if you can erase both of them away. You just make it a little more interesting. So I thought that creative solutions like this, it kind of help. And it seems like it is possible to have facilities open if these types of precautions are taken.
Yeah, that's both what I've seen in terms of the science, but also I have not received information on how a school would implement that. So as of right now, the options on the table that we're getting, both from talking to teachers who work at different districts around California and from our district as they talk to us and send information to us as parents, it seems like every school is going to offer an online-only option. I think that that's going to be the case. For those who are going to open, it doesn't seem like very many are going to be 100% open. It does look like there's going to be some kind of hybrid. The district sent out a survey a few weeks ago to parents. I don't know if teachers were involved in this, but if it was a hybrid program, did parents want kids going 2 days a week? So a class is split into two. Group A goes Monday, Tuesday. They clean the school Wednesday. Group B goes Thursday, Friday. And then I believe they close the school, or they clean the school again over the weekend. That was the first option. Second option was Group A goes Monday, Tuesday of 1 week. Then everyone's virtual on Friday. while they clean. And then group B goes the second week, Monday, Tuesday, while group A stays home the whole time. And either way is kind of between 2 weeks, they're going to spend 4 hours or 4 days at school and 6 days at home between a two 5-day weeks. And so they asked the parents this. They talked about how they're not going to have school lunches at school because they don't want kids mingling. Doesn't seem like there'd be any kind of recess or PE. So we think there might be slightly staggered start and finish times. We're not quite sure. We don't know if parents are allowed in on campus to pick kids up or if they have to wait outside campus. That we haven't had any guidance on. But it does seem that they're at least offering some kind of hybrid of going two days per week or 4 days every 2 weeks. And one of the teachers I talked to, I know she has kids in the school who are also elementary school students. So if she's expected to be in the classroom 4 days a week, but her kids can only be there 2 days a week, how does she watch her kids and help them with their classwork while they're at home? And this is just one example, but problems like this come up every single time of someone is going to be, if not just outright screwed, but someone's going to be disadvantaged or at a, unfortunately, just untenable situation. And most likely it's going to be pretty much every parent. And so we were even trying, like, do we try to just keep them home? Is the extra work we could get done in those 2 days per week worth taking the risk? And even those 2 weeks, only half a day because they're not going to stay there for lunch. The kids don't get to play on the playground with their friends. So are they're not necessarily getting the social benefits that they would like to at school. And I think, I don't know if it's a local issue or even like a national leadership issue. I see videos of children in, I think, South Korea or China, where before entering the school, they clean the bottom of their feet. They either step in bleach or a disinfectant, or they lift their feet up and they spray the bottom of their shoes. Then they wash their hands. If they have a mask, they throw away their mask upon entering the school and they get a new mask. They get kind of fogged down with, a disinfectant spray. And I haven't heard anything like that happening in the U.S. I've heard temperature checks and washing hands. But is that enough? I think so. Is that going to be enough? But what happens when one of the teachers gets it? And now how do you get a substitute teacher to come in to teach 24 potentially exposed students? And I think that's the reason I want to kind of talk about this is every time my wife and I start having this conversation, we almost just get depressed. Like, we just don't have any good solutions or any good ideas, and we don't know what's going to happen. And
yeah, it's a real tough one. I think it's a different scenario when the shutdowns first started in the spring, where I think everybody was just kind of thinking, okay, let's kind of get over the next 2 months and then we'll kind of figure things out from there. But hopefully the curve will bend, cases will go down, and then business back to normal, things will slowly recover. But I think we're now facing the reality of the situation that we're kind of stuck in this for quite some time. It's likely going to be at least through the end of the year, if not double that. And just logistically, I can understand the concerns with, having older kids, because there's a good amount of learning that needs to happen that in the past, you put a ton of kids on the school bus. Well, you can't do that now. Once they get to school, you have a bunch of kids going from class to class. jammed in the hallways. I remember how packed it used to be, you know, when I was a kid, where you're basically elbow to elbow trying to race to the next class.
Oh yeah, for middle school and high school, where they have different classes.
Yeah. So you probably can't do that anymore. And then just even in class, I heard a story from a teacher who says, if a student needs help, I used to, you know, kind of go up to them and kneel down next to them and help them work through a problem. But now I have to stay at my desk. Yeah. How do you help a kid who's kind of falling behind and needs help with a question if you can't get near them? And the kids themselves, they can't buddy up. They're stuck in maybe their single desk the whole day while they're at the school. They get marched out the front door and in through the front door, and that's kind of their educational experience for maybe the next year. It's really challenging to see how that can lead to outcomes that we're hoping to have, as somebody would expect with the school. And as you've mentioned, that there's just problems themselves with if the teachers get sick. You know, an already strained school system where having faculty on hand has been challenging and the reliance on subs has been increasing. That's just gotten a lot worse. You, of course, have a population that within the school district that's perhaps aging and might consider early retirement. You may have another subset that's just high risk in general. And you're certainly going to have a subset, as you mentioned, that have their own kids to worry about, and maybe grandparents at home that are high risk. So, oh boy, my head's just spinning, just going through all this, you know, out loud.
Well, one thing that I have kind of taken is when talking to other parents and other friends, there's definitely a spectrum of how conservative or risky people are being. I know one friend, he is a doctor, but not dealing with COVID patients, but he gets tested regularly. He got tested and then made a trip and visited some friends and family beforehand. He was negative. He got tested right away as soon as he got back afterwards. And he's single, and so he's able to kind of take on more risks from that perspective. He also gets tested regularly, and he's trying to follow the science as much as anyone I know. I know other people who are appropriately paranoid. Like, it's weird to say, like, they're definitely paranoid. They're being as cautious as they can. They are still refusing to see people outside of their bubble. They try to limit interactions as much as possible. They haven't been inside anyone else's house. They're taking all these extra precautions, but again, it's appropriate. That's what I said. It's also like it's a paranoia, but it's a understandable paranoia or an appropriate paranoia. And one of my big things is I don't hold it against either of them. I have no idea how people are going to come up with their decisions, and I'm not going to be confident in the decision that we make. And so as each other household goes through this decision-making process, it really is for themselves, and I don't hold it against them. I don't think that they're making the wrong decision if their decision disagrees with mine. If they send their kids to school and we don't, I don't think that they're doing the wrong thing. I know a couple of parents who the daycare stayed open because there were a few children of essential workers. I know one is the child of a fire chief in the area. And so she was able to stay open. She had to, but she got down to, I think, 3 kids coming into her facility and the rest were online. But as soon as she was allowed to have other kids back in, I know one family sent their kids back to daycare because their just household was too stressful. They couldn't get any work done. The kids weren't looking at anything. It's just kind of a bad situation for everyone. And I don't hold it against them. We didn't. Because we're fortunate, we have the space, we have a backyard, we were able to get the devices to help them. And we're definitely fortunate in that regard. But there's no right answer. And so I don't hold it against other parents for whatever decision they make.
Yeah, I agree. I subscribe to this text messaging service for parents where they send you age-appropriate texts every couple of days. Like before COVID, it was just a lot of, okay, your kid's 2.5 now. Have you scheduled a checkup? Or here's a great activity you can do when it's sunny out and things like that. And a lot of the texts these days are to the parents themselves, like, it's okay. Anything goes. Just one day at a time. Hang in there and whatever works is kind of the new mantra. And I agree. It's a situation where you may have had different standards before all this happened, and it's perfectly fine if they changed because of all this.
Yeah. We actually had a trip to Disneyland planned in April during the kids' spring break, and that was kind of, it almost was easy to cancel. It's like, this sucks, but we'll get through this. Sorry, it's just the way it works. I was supposed to have a fantasy draft that we were going to meet in Nashville at the end of August. And my group of friends, we've been planning this since January, basically. As soon as the prior season ended, we chose a city and started planning a date. And that's not going to happen. I mean, we're still far enough out that theoretically it could, but we just know there's enough people in the group that aren't going to go. And if we don't have everyone there, then we're going to do it online, if there even is an NFL season. But that kind of sucked, but we could deal with it. All the summer camps got canceled, so the girls have been at home, and they've been doing pretty good. We can tell that they kind of have a little of that cabin fever. They're just frustrated, but they're doing pretty good. But then my wife mentioned, like, we may not have Thanksgiving dinner, and we may not see the big family for Christmas. And like, just thinking about that hurts so much. I love those big family gatherings. I love seeing cousins and aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, and just hanging out for several hours. So this Thanksgiving and Christmas, I love those. But yeah, it feels weird to think that all of those good things with me aren't going to happen. And it's still July. So July 4th didn't happen. We didn't go outside, didn't have any kind of friends over for a backyard barbecue. There's no fireworks. And it almost hurts thinking about it. I think I saw on Twitter today, someone talked about like their doom scroll, just scrolling through Twitter, just reading all the bad news. And I have this like internal debate of, should I pay attention to everything and try and stay up to date on all the news? Or is that bad for my mental health? Should I just stick my head in the sand? And it goes back to like, if some people want to be just ignorant of what's going on because it's too stressful, I get it. I don't want to hold it against them. And other people I know, becomes their daily habit to check case counts per state and county and see what the growth is. And they're staying on top of it more than anything else. And I don't know if that helps or hurts, but I don't hold it against them.
We're going to see a pretty broad spectrum of people handling this in all different ways that they can use to cope with what's going on. And the hope is that if we can just kind of hold things together, that either herd immunity or a vaccine or some combination thereof, of just social distancing and allowing case numbers to drop off and then doing trace controls on outbreaks as they come up down the road. There's hope that we can kind of contain this and just kind of move on. And I'm sure we'll get there. It's one of those things where I'm hoping we all understand that this isn't permanent. This is 2 years, maybe 1 year. Oh boy, oh, it's hard to say. But I think the reality is it's not a few months as we had, or at least I had fooled myself into thinking when this all started, kind of not allowing myself to think too far ahead. And there have been situations where I'm sure an entire generation has been impacted. Maybe this might be the defining moment for the generation that we live in. And at least there might be some sort of end to this tunnel.
Yeah. So one thing I do kind of try to talk about, I see people online talking like, once you get out of this, what's your new project? What's going to be your new superpower? What are you working on? How are you fitter, cooking for yourself, something like that? And the general thing like across parents I see is just, my kids are alive. That's like, I'm trying to set the bar really, really low. But because, so there's enough time where my wife is on a meeting or a call and the kids just, we know they're not going to be quiet. So I go out in the backyard, I take all the kids and the dog out in the backyard. And because I'm out there, I've actually been building a pretty big play structure. And I'm probably 40% the way through. And so I was thinking, like, yeah, I got plenty of time to keep working on this because nothing's going to change. But I am a little happy with that. That has been one kind of small source. Like it's enough of a, I have to learn some more advanced woodworking techniques, but it's starting to come out pretty well. And I am happy with that. So for you, I'm curious, is there anything that new that you feel might stick? I remember you mentioned you were running for a while until you got injured. Now that we've been doing this for 4 months, is there something that you could take as a positive?
Yeah, I did actually pick up that running again. So I think when this first started, I'd mentioned that given all the time at home, I wanted to pick up something, and I did start running, and I did hurt my knees promptly soon after. But I did my own physical therapy, kind of rebuilt myself a bit and started running again. And I think it has stuck, to be honest. When I first began, I could barely go 100, 200 feet without stopping and panting and things like that. And it took me over half an hour to do that mile and a half. And it was just something that I would plan a good hour for that, you know, just to kind of work myself up and get out there and whatnot. But I kept at it. I put some motivational goals. Like I put a calendar on my wall and checked off whenever I made it out there and did the mile and a half. And actually, about a month ago, three or 4 weeks ago, I ended up running my first mile and a half without stopping, probably for the first time in my whole life, to be honest.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, I was just thinking back, have I actually run a full mile? And the answer is probably not. I've never actually done it until now. So my first time wasn't great, but it was definitely great having the understanding that, wow, I actually did run that without stopping. And since then, I've continued to, instead of putting the check boxes on my calendar, I've started just tracking my time now and gone lower and lower. And it's in itself pretty motivating. And beyond that, I understand what people say when they have like a runner's high. I feel it now and I get it. And it took about 40 years. But it's one of those things that, yeah, I don't think I would have put the priority that I was able to put on it without having gone through what we've done in the past few months. So at the end of the day, I probably am in better shape than I've ever been from that perspective, for sure.
That's very impressive. Congratulations. I've done some morning workouts. I think my pull-ups might be the highest I've ever done, but the rest of my workout routine is really messed up. So I'm really proud of you.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
I think I want to kind of wrap up there. I think that's a good note to end on, but I do like reiterating the message that however people are getting through this, I don't hold anything against them. I know some people are drinking more. I know some people are eating unhealthy. Some people are exercising more. Some people are spending a lot of time with their kids. Some people acknowledge they feel like they are neglecting their kids. So the lot of Netflix and Disney Plus on iPads and computers. Some are just kicking them outside and letting them fend for themselves. Like whatever parents are doing to get through this time, I say good job.
I agree. Well done. That there are no rules at this point. If you're a parent, just do the best you can, and that's the best you can do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much for the conversation today, Trishel. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. And thanks, everybody, for listening. And if you're enjoying these conversations, feel free to drop us a line or leave us a review. Okay, bye.
Bye. We appreciate you joining us today for this episode of the Mind Money Spectrum podcast. Be sure to visit mindmoneyspectrum.com to access the entire library of episodes. Remember, it's not black and white, but the wide spectrum of gray area where you get to pursue the freedoms you want in life. Opinions voiced in this material are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. All performance referenced is historical as no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested in directly. Have a nice day.